Hello, Ian. Welcome to the second best Apple conversation that you're not going to hear all week long.
You've been practicing that, haven't you?
Okay, switch Skype to do not disturb. iOS devices turned off. Wife given iPad downstairs. Don't disturb me. She's doing the shopping online. And I've got a beer. What could possibly go wrong? So how's my audio sounding anyway?
Good. Fine.
Yeah, really good.
Good. I'm trying my mic in a new position.
All right.
Which is much more comfortable.
Oh, good. Oh, that reminds me. How's my audio? Is that okay?
Your audio is good, yeah.
Good. I'm trying my mic in a new position. It's the right way round. I just found out there's a specific direction I'm meant to talk in this, and I never knew, which would explain why last week I was a bit quieter than normal.
Ah.
Why make things easy for yourself, George?
I know. Instruction manuals. Who reads them, really?
I do.
This is Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting. You can find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to episode 17 of Back to the Mac. It's a show about Mac stuff. We don't do iOS. Well, apart from last week. With us tonight, we have a proliferation of guests, as in we have one more than last week. So I have with me Johnny Winter. Say hello, Johnny.
Hello, Johnny.
And I have Jordan. Say hello, Jordan.
Hello, Jordan.
Cool. How's everyone?
Not bad. I'm just a little concerned that the collective noun for Jordan and I is a proliferation. It sounds a bit messy, actually.
What's this in the dot then? iOS Googles. That's you, Johnny. Do you want to tell us what that means?
Oh, catch up on items arising from the last show. Yeah, I listened to episode 16, which was a very interesting listen, given that I wasn't involved in the making of it. Well, I was involved in the making of it. I edited the thing, didn't I?
Yeah.
But it was a conversation between the two of you last week. And it gave me a great opportunity, actually, to catch up on Google, on iOS, on Linux, on Android, on the VIC 20 and Commodore. Not much about the Mac.
There was nothing to talk about. Not
it
even
was a
rumors.
Slow week.
Not even rubbish rumors. There was just nothing.
I'm sure we can find some rubbish rumours to talk about this week, though, Richard.
Yeah, we've definitely got some rubbish rumours this week. Speaking of which, nice little segue there. We've got a rumour about a possible Mac Pro replacement coming soon. Does anybody want to tell about that?
Yeah, there's a possible Mac Pro replacement in the future.
Well, I'm pleased we've got that out of the way.
Yeah,
move it on.
It's one of these rumours that came to light a couple of days ago. A lot of people are citing sources close within Apple's walls and that there'll be a new replacement for the Mac Pro sometime soon. But take that with a pinch of salt. To be honest, it's a rumour which is at some point in the future, Apple will replace one product with a replacement new product. It's not really a rumour, I don't think, but the Mac Pro is the likely contender for a new machine, at least.
What gets me as well is the fact that it just tells you nothing at all. Our source offered no information as to whether the Mac Pro replacement would be a tower, mini tower, or some other solution, and did also say that the announcement could slip to me, or June, but maybe April. It's like, why did you say it? Or this year, or maybe next year. It's just so vague. It's pointless.
Well, if you're not convinced about the vagueness of this article by that point. They go on to say, we cannot independently corroborate this information, so this item has been categorized as a rumor.
The problem with Apple, though, is it's a rumor until it's on the Apple Store. There's no two ways about it. Unless Tim Cook walks on stage and says, this is the new such and such, this is the new Mac Pro, it's always going to be a rumor. And it's always a rumor about a computer that's going to be replaced soon, which, unless Apple are never going to make a new Mac Pro, they're always going to replace it sometime in the future. It has been nearly 2 years since it was last updated quite substantially, so it is due for one, but whether or not that is classed as a rumour, I probably wouldn't say.
About, what was it, 6 or 7 months ago, Paul O'Grady did say that there was going to be a new Mac Pro this year. People had been waiting for a long time and were getting restless about it, and he said, look, just bear with us, you know, there will be an announcement, there will be something coming in 2013. So, you know, as rumours go, this isn't really up there with the Gene Munster Apple TV rumour, is it? This is something that's fairly certain.
Yeah, and coupled to the fact that it's now no longer available in Europe, so the Mac Pro, due to various guidelines about safety and health and all that.
Yeah, I think the issue on that with the old Mac Pro was that if you could run the computer and take the side off it and stick your finger in where the fan was spinning around, and that was deemed a risk.
Yeah, that's right. The fans would always spin down, though, so it was never a huge risk. But like you said, it was an exposed fan, so it was a safety risk. But Apple, rather than resolve this and make a substantial change to the Mac Pro, which they weren't ready for, they just pulled it. And everyone saw that as a sign of maybe the Mac Pro isn't long for this world now. But
next thing, Europe will be telling us that it's not a good idea to stick your hand in the vacuum cleaner while it's working.
Well, I mean, clearly, obviously, Johnny Ive would have had to change the product line because, you know, the previous flamethrower that was installed on it was going to violate the rules as well, wasn't it? You know, Europe, what it is, you know. And the spinning razor blades as well.
I think, you know, the rumours I've been reading on this, there has been some talk about a smaller form factor for the Mac Pro, a mini tower, and they actually mentioned mini tower in this article, which is one of the few things they do mention. I think Apple's received some feedback on the size of the Mac Pro, because it is a particularly large machine, physically wise. You know, it's huge, and it must cost a fortune in aluminium to manufacture that. So, you know, going for a slightly smaller tower, retaining some of that flexibility so that people can swap in a new graphics card or new hard drives, or whatever they do on these machines, then, you know, maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah, there's space inside for four hard drives, and there's space for several PCI Express cards. But the Mac Pro would need a substantial redesign, simply because it doesn't contain Thunderbolt. So if Apple were going to redesign it, I agree with you. I think there is going to be maybe a smaller form factor, simply because a lot of the expansion you could do internally could be done with some sort of breakout box, like the Promise RAID Thunderbolt storage device. You could put your hard drives in that. There are external PCI expansion boxes you can get that work on Thunderbolt, and the speed of Thunderbolt already, without any newer ones already announced, this could theoretically mean the Mac Pro could be much smaller, cheaper, and if you need the expansion, Apple or a third party may sell an expansion box that you could put additional hard drives, additional PCI cards in. You know, the Thunderbolt expansion is almost limitless and would negate the rather large size of the Mac Pro that it already is.
And I think it's something we're coming on to talk about a little later, but, you know, the Thunderbolt issue, Intel has just announced today or yesterday that Thunderbolt speeds are increasing from 10 gigabits per second to 20 gigabits per second, I believe. And also on the Mac Pro, I don't know whether you read, there was an article published about 8 days ago, in fact, precisely 8 days ago, which was talking about the Mac Pro. They had a scoop on the Mac Pro, actually. It's going to be called the Mac Pro Prime, which is easy for me to say after a glass of beer.
The Mac Pro Prime?
Yeah, the Mac Pro Prime. What it is, it's going to be a seven-core processor, and you're only going to be able to expand it in 11 gigabytes at a time or something ridiculous. It was April 1st when this article came out.
Ah.
I was thinking that was familiar, and then I remember April Fool's.
The name alone was rubbish. It wasn't going to be Apple.
Well, you say the name alone is rubbish. I know we don't do iOS on this show, as you two proved last week, but, you know, there's some chaps been out this week in the news saying that Apple's naming convention for the iOS devices is rubbish. You know, they had the iPhone 3G. Well, that made sense because it was working on 3G. Then they had the... No, sorry, was it the 3... It wasn't the 3G first, was it? It was the iPhone... Then the iPhone 3G. Then the iPhone 3GS, which was speed bump. Then the iPhone 4, iPhone 4S, iPhone 5. Who knows where we're going next? Probably iPhone 5S. But then with the iPad, you had iPad 2.
3.
Was it iPad 3? And then the new iPad.
Yep.
Which is meaningless. Everybody calls it the iPad 4, but it's not referred to officially in that way, is it?
No. I mean, not to keep going on about iOS. Obviously, we don't do iOS here.
We don't do iOS.
But the naming convention's always been a bit weird. I always thought, well, they do MacBook Pro, and they have the different 13-inch, 15-inch, 17-inch, well, not so much 17-inch now. They have the iMac. That's the name. And every time there's a new iMac, it's an iMac. The old one is replaced. The phones and the iPads were a little bit different because they tend to keep the previous model, with the exception of the iPad 2 and the original iPhone. They're having two products running in tandem. So I suppose it's hard to differentiate between, well, here's the, you know, if they released a new iPhone and called it iPhone, but then iPhone 5 sounds better than new iPhone. So I don't know how that would tally up. And certainly with the Mac Pro, I suspect if they do replace it, I'm sure they'd keep the name. Mac Pro still has a lot of weight in the the professional circles where, you know, they require a heavy duty machine. So I can't see them changing the Mac Pro name. But certainly the name may be something that could be improved upon a little bit.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because Apple has always been admired. You know, when Steve Jobs came back to Apple and they had a proliferation, there's a word. They had a proliferation of devices, and he cut out a whole load of the model range and brought it, you know, back down to basics. If you look at the offering on the Mac side of things at the moment from Apple, you've got basically good, better, best, haven't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's very simple for the consumer to understand. You go and buy an HP printer, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of the things. You try and find the right printer driver if you've got a PC, and you're trying to get your HP printer working. Good luck. Trying to find the correct printer driver, it's a bloody nightmare.
Probably just trying to find the printer setup, it would be hard enough.
Yeah, it would. Once you've found that, trying to find the right printer driver for your 600 megabyte download for your HP bloatware. it's really frustrating, isn't it, Neil?
Right. He said he wanted his mention tonight, so that's it.
He said he's going to start invoicing you for the mentions, Richard.
Yeah. He said, any more and I'll invoice you. Right, so speaking, seeing as we've mentioned the dirty M word, we may as well move on to that now. And Microsoft Office...
Which is the dirty word, Richard?
Microsoft.
Oh, right. I wasn't sure whether you said M for Mike or N for November.
All right, sorry. Microsoft are ending their support for Office 2008 today, isn't it? There you go. There's some hot news.
There's an end of an era.
Yep.
End of an era.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah, most definitely the end of an era.
So there's nothing... End of an era, yeah. So there's... Microsoft recommends that users purchase an Office 365 subscription, not over my dead body. But there you go. And I heard as well from he who shall not be mentioned that Windows XP is going to end very soon as well, I believe.
I think that's so, in 1 year's time. 364 days to go on Windows XP as of 9th of April. So when this podcast gets published, it'll be 362 days to go.
You really made that hard for yourself, didn't you?
I did. It's because I had a sip of this Czech beer before I tried to do maths. And it's often not good trying to do maths this late in the evening after drinking Inca Hall.
Didn't XP come out in 2001?
Yes, I think it was.
So it would have been 13 years it had been supported.
One in four PCs still run Windows XP.
You know, a lot of pet owners would have put their animals down long before this. I'm not drawing an analogy or anything, but...
That's an odd comparison to use.
I don't really see Windows XP as a pet, to be honest. I'm not that fond of it.
If you did, you'd put it down, probably.
Yeah. Take it out the back.
This article that you've linked to here, Richard, it's from Mac Rumors. It says Microsoft to end support for Office 2008 for Mac on 9th of April. Mm. I think they should have just ended that heading after the word end. That would be much better news.
They could have kept the date as well.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Microsoft to end on 9th of April.
Talking about naming again, I never understood why Microsoft named their Office packages after a date, because 2008 and 2011, after a year, it sounds extremely dated. Yeah. So, you know, this is 5 years old.
Windows 95 wasn't launched until August 1995, if I remember rightly. And I do.
that's another one as well. You know, 95, and if you've got that running for 3 years, it just makes it sound as though it ages quicker than it would do. I mean,
their naming convention was up the spout, wasn't it? Windows 95, Windows ME, Windows... Was there another
2000?
One? There was Windows 2000, which was based on the NT technology, yeah. I think, which was more sort of corporate. And then you had Windows XP and Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8. I mean, it's all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. They even have Windows Server 2003, which I think is one of the latest, or more recent ones after that. It's 2008, so that's a five-year-old OS. That a lot of companies would still use. I mean, I'd never imagine OS X ever using dates as a naming convention.
It's the corporate IT, isn't it? That's the issue. They don't want to have to go around changing all their proprietary software when you know they're forced to make an upgrade to Microsoft.
Mm.
To be fair, a lot of business is still running on Windows XP.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. They're not going to want to upgrade. You know, because they'd be terrified. They'd probably spend ages getting everything set up the way they want it. And then, you know, you throw Windows 8 at it and nobody will be able to log in, never mind do what they need to do. So I'm only joking. but you know what I mean? It causes far too much hassle for them, doesn't it? So
yeah, well, even for the end user, Windows XP, after that it was, what, Vista 7 and then 8, so that's three operating systems. Now we've got Mountain Lion. If we would go back three, it's Lion, Snow Leopard. That'd be if Apple was still supporting Leopard.
Yeah, and that's kind of weird.
That support dropped a long time ago.
But yeah. They are still supporting Snow Leopard, of which 28% of Mac users are still using.
Well, Snow Leopard is to Windows XP, isn't it? It's a rock solid operating system.
It's one of the last ones that will run on a majority of Intel machines. After that, you are looking at Core 2 Duo machines or machines that came with a lot more RAM.
That's correct.
So it's kind of the last staple for a lot of people who were early adopters of Intel. So supplementary updates for security is probably something Apple will do now and again. But I suspect support has been all but dropped, thankfully.
So, okay, we talked about Microsoft, we talked about naming conventions. Are we clear on what this article is, Microsoft to end support for Office 2008 today? What are they suggesting, Richard, here?
I think they're going to end support for Office 2008.
On Mac. Well, the thing is, you can't even install Microsoft Office 2008 on a new Mac. If you've got a Mac with Lion or Mountain Lion, you can't install Office 2008. The reason being, the installer for Microsoft Office requires Rosetta to run.
Ah, okay.
So if you've upgraded from Snow Leopard to Lion or Snow Leopard to Mountain Lion, it will still work, in a manner of speaking. It's the installer that won't work. So if you've got a fresh installer or a newer machine, it's just not going to install anyway. And that's no bad thing.
They're suggesting to purchase an Office 365 subscription, which includes access to the Office Online Suite, but it includes a full version of Office 2011 that you are licensed to use on up to five of your own computers, your own Mac, sorry. So the $100 a year or $10 a month tends to include the full online Office Suite, and also Office 2011 as a download that you can install on five Macs. So if you do use Office a lot at home and you've got a couple of Macs to install it on, even for a year, it may work out.
Jordan, let me just clarify that. For $10 a month, which is what, about £7 a month at the moment?
Yeah, let me translate that into proper British good old sterling. I use Office 365 for my email, and I always forget how much the extra money is as well, the extra Office is. But you pay a subscription and you effectively get a download that lasts as long as your subscription is.
So $100 a year.
Yeah.
And you get Office 365. What is that exactly?
So Office 365 is their online Office suite. So effectively, it's
why would I want that if I can download the full version?
It's if you're on another computer or you want to use a web browser, kind of like Google Docs, where you can access spreadsheets and Word documents through your internet browser. So it kind of ties in with Microsoft SkyDrive, which is their Dropbox comparison as well. It's more like Google Apps if you're a business, so you get your own hosted email service as well. But
is the Word and Excel on Office 365, is that better than what I've seen on SkyDrive in the web browser? Or is it the same?
Pass. I honestly couldn't tell you. I suspect it's probably the same, but allows you to edit. Some of them only allow you to view. In the UK, it's £10 plus VAT a month per user.
Oh, that's naughty.
It is, yeah.
Dollars translating directly into pounds and then adding VAT on top.
Yeah, not particularly nice, no.
That's an Apple trick.
It's the Apple currency conversion again.
Yeah.
Well, Microsoft is copying Apple a lot, isn't it? I mean, they all are.
Yeah, they don't need to copy that, though.
Okay, so if I went for this Office 365 subscription and being able to download Office onto five Macs. Could I download it onto my Mac at home, my Mac at work, my parents' Macs, and my father-in-law's Macs? That would be five Macs. They're in different places.
It does suggest per user, so their licensing will probably state it's for your own use. If you are using five different computers, that's fine. It doesn't specifically say whether or not they're at home. It could do in the fine print somewhere. Now, the benefit of the Office 365, depending on exactly what you want to use it for, should they release a new version, I would expect you will then have access to the new version of Office. So if they do release an Office 2013, 2014, or whatever, then you will probably be able to upgrade your current version of Office to that latest one as part of your subscription.
I think what's driving this is Microsoft wanting to milk more money out of consumers. I still run Office 2003 on my Windows XP laptop. It works, and it does everything that you need it to do. They keep upgrading these Office suites with more and more functions that, only a very small number of people use. For the vast majority of people, they barely scratch the surface of what these products can do. They just need a basic word processor to write letters and a basic spreadsheet to do basic spreadsheet stuff. They don't require all the complexity that has grown up over the years on the Office products. And yet, Microsoft keeps foisting new features on us, trying to get us to upgrade to the latest and greatest version and give them more money. Office 2003 on a PC, okay, is probably a security risk now. But, in terms of doing what it's supposed to do, it does it pretty well. And also look at it, whatever you pay for Office these days, moving to a subscription model, software as a service, that's very good because you can dip in and out of it, when you need it. But for those businesses or those people who require this software all the time, you're going to end up paying over and over for the same product, I think.
Yeah. And the price on Office 365 is, it's not so much, you know, the one I'm quoting at the moment is aimed at businesses. So it includes the per user, which includes a 25 gigabyte Exchange email account. But going back to your point about most of the features a lot of people don't use, it's exactly right. And it's the same reason that people believe they need Photoshop, this £700 piece of software, when all they want to do is fix red eye in a picture. When I used to live in London, one of the clients that the company I worked at supported had a mixture of Office 2011, 2008, and 2004. And they would open up and save Word documents, and some of them would save them in the new .docx format, which wouldn't work on the older versions of Office. Mm-hmm. And I used to say to them, well, you really need to upgrade all your versions of Office to the same version. It's not nice, but you're going to have to. And one of the girls there said, oh, no, it's not a problem. All we found out is if we just rename it and take the X off the end of it, it opens fine. And it was just that little X at the end makes it unopenable. Knocking that little X off, it opens up fine because they weren't using any of these advanced features.
Oh my God.
It was just completely baffling that they could create this new document that Office, Microsoft say, doesn't work in previous versions of Office, and they just rename it and taking one file.
Surely an easier way would have been to get the default format that it saved to as just the standard .doc rather than .docx.
You are overestimating. You're overestimating the, let's say that the technical savviness of the average Office user who was using.
But that comes back to the point, doesn't it, Jordan? You know, the tech savviness of the average user, they really don't need all this functionality, all these features. They just need basic word processing. And I really think for that reason that people need to look at what they require of something, and especially on the Mac platform, there are so many good pieces of software out there that you can use for word processing. Do your articles, write your letters. You don't need Word to do it.
Yeah, and if you're a Mac user, you tend to probably have an iOS device as well. So although Pages is a great application, I don't think it's probably one of the best word processors out there. But for most people who would want Office but don't need the extra features of macros and all these extra gubbins that it does, Pages is perfect. And if you've got it on iOS, your documents sync over iCloud, and you can also save your documents to iCloud anyway. So Pages is a good option. OpenOffice is another great option as well. There are these other alternatives that, yes, they're not the Microsoft name, but everyone assumes because it's Microsoft Office, if I don't have Microsoft Office, I can't open Microsoft Office documents. And a lot of people panic when they hear that, and they go, no, it's got to be Word documents. I have to be able to open these. And they just fluster and think, I'd rather just pay the extra money and know it's going to work than I'm sure you're telling me I can open them in Pages fine, but I don't want to take the extra risk. And some businesses even today still say, we have to get it in Word document. We need to have Microsoft Word. You know, there's loads of products out there. I'm sure they're great. We need Microsoft Word. The same reason some businesses insist on Outlook. There's better options out there than Outlook for Mac. But they insist upon using Outlook for Mac for whatever reason.
What happens to your data if you end your subscription? I presume you lose access to it?
I think your data is still all stored on your Mac.
Locally, right.
Yeah, you have the option of putting them into something like SkyDrive and then Office Online, so you have the option to open them there. But you would probably get a warning saying, back this up because you're not subscribing anymore, you'll lose this otherwise. At least I'd hope they tell you.
So that kind of brings a little bit onto the next item, which I think, Johnny, did you add about Amazon Cloud Drive?
Yeah, this is a fairly new. I just saw this pop up recently, and it's along the Dropbox line of things. You know, up until a couple of years ago, everybody was carrying around their data on little USB keys, and Dropbox came along and it solved the problem, really, of losing a USB key by syncing the data in a special folder on your Mac to Dropbox in the cloud and to any other Macs that you have. And since then, it seems that, you know, there's a proliferation of companies wanting to replicate the success of Dropbox. Dropbox has made it very simple. It's pretty easy to understand. They've introduced new features along the way, but it's a pretty simple concept. And I think it works so well because it is so simple. But, you know, the whole world and his dog is trying to come up with Dropbox clones or Dropbox competitors now. And, you know, Amazon seems to be the latest one into the fray. They're offering a 5 gigabyte account. You can download a little application on your Mac, synchronize your data like Dropbox. You can synchronize across Mac, something called Android, Windows, and I think I don't know whether they have an iOS client yet. But Amazon Cloud Drive, 5 gigabytes free, allows you to store up to 2,000 photos, I reckon.
Can you see anything different about this? I can't see any compelling reason to use this over any other alternative.
I can't see a compelling reason to use it either. I mean, the irony is that Dropbox hosts all its data on Amazon S3 storage.
I just think, what are you bothering for? You're not giving them anything to...
They give you more space than Dropbox.
They give you what, 2, is it, to start with?
Dropbox gives you 2.
Right.
If you get a referral link from me on Twitter, at @Johnny_Winter, then you get 2.5 gig. But yeah, Amazon are giving you 5 gig to start off.
And Apple gave you 5.
Yeah, Apple give you 5 on iCloud, although, you know, the way that works is slightly different.
And has Google got its own storage?
Yeah, you got Google Drive, that gives you 5 gig. The way that gives you 5. Slightly different, yeah.
So if you've got an Android device, what's going on there? If you've got an Android device, you're probably using Google for most of your stuff. I think a lot of people do on Android. So you would have that anyway, wouldn't you?
I mean, yeah, there are loads of these services now. I mean, you've got Dropbox, which is the daddy of them all. This is what started it off. And to be fair, you know, keep it simple. That's the easiest to understand. You've got Google Drive. They have a client you can download for your Mac. In fact, they'll read Word documents as well, so you don't need to install Microsoft Office. You've got SkyDrive from Microsoft. I think they give you 5 gig to start off with, and you can do your word processing online in the browser. Not quite as good an experience as I was hoping for. You've got Box.net. They've been around a long time. I think they give you 5 gig. You've got Cubby from Log Me In. They give you 5 gig to get started. Amazon Cloud Drive, as I've mentioned. Some place called Dump Truck give you 5 gig. I think they store on their own servers, I think. And copy.com is another one. Those are just the ones and then you've got, I think there's one called Open Drive or something, or Own Drive. Basically, you set up your own Dropbox type thing with an external drive plugged in or something. There are loads.
Yeah, what bothers me about this a little bit is just the, I don't know, if you're a company like as big as Amazon, why can't they come out and say, well, our service does this and nobody else is doing this? They're just doing exactly the same as what everybody else. I'm just disappointed that there's nothing in this that's remotely attractive.
You say that. I mean, there are companies out there, Richard, that have come out and tried to put a slightly different spin on it. And one that's been in beta for a long time and came out as a full product a couple of months ago is a site called Bitcasa, BITCASA. And they've got sort of 3 strings to their bow, which, you know, is a straight Dropbox thing, synchronizing a folder across devices. Then there's something they call Infinite Drive, where you basically... you never run out of space. It only stores the latest stuff. So you can have a folder. You might have a 1 terabyte hard drive on your computer. You have a particular folder, and you look at the folder space on there, and it'll tell you you've got, you know, 15 petabytes or something ridiculous. Maybe it's not that much, but it's a lot. It's larger than the capacity of your machine. And what it does is any information you put in that folder, it synchronizes it all off to Bitcasa in the cloud, and it only stores so much locally on your machine. Mm-hmm. So if you go to access a file that's not on your machine, it will stream that, it will download it from the cloud. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you maintain, first in, last out or something with the data. It gives you a subset of all your data that you've got in the cloud, but it gives you the view of all the data you've got in the cloud. And then they've got another string to their bow, which I can't even remember, and it actually gets quite confusing. So I think the Dropbox model is very easy to understand. But when companies try to put their own spin on it, for techies it might be easy to understand. But for the man in the street, I mean, for the man in the street, Dropbox is pretty hard to understand.
Yeah.
You know, simple.
Oh, all right. Here's something that's just occurred to me whilst you've been talking, Johnny. Given that Amazon own Amazon S3, why couldn't they be more generous with the storage? Why couldn't
you can have
10 gig, you can have 20 gig, you know. 5 just seems a bit poxy now.
I don't know. Let me just get Jeff Bezos on the phone and ask him.
Yeah, I'm sure you've got a direct line, haven't you?
Of course.
I think the issue with having, say, 20 gig or more than 5 gig is it's like this Amazon Drive service is something that is designed to be used with their Kindle platform, which doesn't have that capacity. So if they offered, say, 20, 25 gigabytes, but this worked in the same way as Dropbox, where everything is always local on your device, you could find yourself inadvertently filling up your entire Kindle device with your Kindle Fire device with more than everything you could ever possibly need and not having any free space. So 5 gigabytes tends to be a good round number to not so much. It's not so much that Amazon don't have the storage space, but if people are using, say, 3G or 4G data connections then, and they see that they've got unlimited storage, so to speak, it could potentially cause people to incur huge amounts of data costs with uploading and downloading. This is just, it just seems to be their own version of iCloud. It's their own way to bind someone to, say, their Kindle platform. And once you're in, I suspect if you open up a new Kindle Fire today or in the next few weeks, you'll probably have an option on the home screen, just like you do on iOS with iCloud. Would you like to sign up to Amazon Cloud Storage, Cloud Drive or whatever?
I suppose, Jordan, you know, there's another aspect to it in terms of the amount of storage you get. Sort of a variation on Parkinson's law, which is work will expand to fill the time available to it. You know, data will expand to fill the space available to it. If you offer people unlimited storage, they're going to upload to back up their entire video collection, their whole music collection, you know, all sorts of things. When we're talking about Word documents, they really don't take up very much space at all. When you get onto media, photos, you know, videos, music, and that takes up much more space than documents.
Yeah. One of the benefits of the Dropbox feature set and the fact that Dropbox is the service that a lot of companies are trying to go for with iCloud, Apple are doing their own implementation of that. They're taking it in their own direction. But Google Drive, Microsoft SkyDrive, and Amazon Cloud Drive are all doing the same sort of thing. I think the one fact that Dropbox is still so ubiquitous is because it's so well known within the tech circle. And also, it's platform agnostic. It's not tied to a platform. Dropbox don't have an affiliation with Android or iOS. They may offer, say, an extra 20 gigabytes of storage for a year if you've got a Galaxy S3, but they're not exclusive to one platform, or they're not designed by the same company that make the same device. This happens with iCloud and Apple. So Apple create iCloud as a great way to synchronize your data, and for the most part it works, but it does tie you into OS X and iOS. So if you store your data on an iOS device or in iCloud, you can only access it on an iOS device or OS X. If you put it on Dropbox, you can pretty much get your data on almost every device.
Sorry, Jordan. Yeah? You can access your stuff through iCloud.com.
If you've got, say, a document that you saved in iCloud, like, say, in BiWord, a writing application, for example.
That'll not work.
Yeah, you'll only be able to get it through that application. Dropbox, anything you put on it is website, it's any of the clients for an OS. Amazon Cloud Drive is, it looks like it's for desktop and Android, so there doesn't appear to be an iOS app yet, but I'm sure it'll be through a website. Google Drive, again, you've got different clients for different platforms, but they're still, like iCloud to Apple, they're still tied to a specific platform. So there's nothing stopping them in the future sort of reining some of the features in and going, well, if you had a Galaxy S4, then you'd get an extra 5 gigabytes for life. If you have a Kindle, we'd give you 15 gigabytes on Amazon. And it's kind of, it's more of a marketing thing. Like you said before, they run this S3 host storage service, which is used by thousands of different websites from Apple to Dropbox. And this is just seen to them, this is a drop in the ocean. This will cost them absolutely nothing to do, but it's a way of a marketing ploy, not a marketing ploy, but it's a marketing method to draw more people to their platform and tie people into that platform. The same way, if you spend hundreds of pounds on iOS applications, you are less likely to move to Android and vice versa.
It's very interesting, isn't it, Jordan? The way iCloud works at the moment, you have to have an Apple device. iCloud is the cloud service that works with Apple stuff and nothing else. Your point was that Dropbox was platform agnostic. You'd think that Apple would learn from its history. Back when the iPod came out, it was an Apple-only device. iTunes would only work on the Apple platform. And it was, whilst the iPod was a very interesting device at the time, you had to have an Apple to use one, a Mac rather. And it was only some time later, a short time later, that they opened it up. They enabled access to iTunes on Windows, and then it just took off.
It
enabled Windows users to buy this revolutionary new Apple device and use that. I mean, a lot of people who own Apple products might own an iPhone or an iPod or an iPad, but their day-to-day lives, they use Windows machines.
Yep.
Yeah, there is an iCloud control panel for Windows, which does let you synchronize your bookmarks and mail, contacts, XP, calendars. It doesn't. It's still Windows 7 or above. The problem is, although it works with PhotoStream, it's going back to that problem of file access, because Apple are aiming for a different system besides a traditional file system. So if you have a document in an application, like TextEdit, for example, you cannot access that document on any other iOS device or any other Mac application unless
that, that
it's TextEdit.
That throws up all sorts of interesting questions, doesn't it? Because you have, say, a .txt file or a .rtf file, which on normal OS X or Windows or Linux or whatever platform, you can choose which application you want to open that particular file. The way Apple is moving with iCloud and, you know, having applications on different devices synchronizing files through iCloud, you don't have that choice to open your image in PhotoChop or GIMP or Preview or Pixelmator or whichever photo editing application that you choose. You're stuck with the one you created it in.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why I don't personally use iCloud for anything more than synchronizing contacts and calendars. I use it for mail, contacts, and calendars on a daily basis, and I use Safari tabs and bookmarks all the time. I think they're great features. PhotoStream, perfect. It saves me having to plug in my iPhone at all. However, I don't use it for storing files, so I don't use it in Ulysses or Byword. I don't use them in those applications. I use Dropbox simply because I've always used Dropbox. It works how I want it to. Occasionally, like you said, I'll want to open a document in another application.
Let me give you a top tip regarding Dropbox and iCloud. A couple of weeks ago, I created a 500-word article using Byword on my iPad, and I was very pleased with the article. I went to the settings or something in Byword, and I came back to my article, and I watched 500 words or so just disappear from right in front of my eyes. And there was no way that I could get that back. Now, that was synchronizing via iCloud, and I thought, well, I can go up to the iMac upstairs and retrieve it there. Launched Byword on the iMac, showed me the document I'd created half an hour earlier, clicked to load that document. It flashed up with the 500 words, which it promptly removed. And there was nothing I could do to get that information back. There's no versioning. There's no previous copies on the data that you store in Dropbox. The only versioning that exists is if Time Machine catches anything, you know, stored on your Mac. And, of course, that wasn't the case. If you change your settings on Byword, which you can do, change them on your iOS device and on your Mac, you can change it to use Dropbox. And what it does is it saves text files to Dropbox to a particular folder, and you can view that via the file system in OS X. You can edit the documents in an app of your choice, or you can edit it using Byword on your Mac or on your iOS device. And Dropbox has versioning on the free account for the last 30 days. It'll give you access to the last 30 days worth of revisions. Don't use iCloud, apart from syncing contacts and calendars. I've learnt the hard way.
Yeah, it's just not ready, I don't think, for...
It's not.
I think it is aimed at new users who don't need things like versioning or who are editing documents so lightly and so... And probably on a single device, they're not syncing them between different a Mac and an iPhone. They're probably just using it on their iPad and that's it. So it's just a way of, if it goes wrong, they can go to an Apple store, get the device replaced, log into iCloud and download everything again and always have a backup. Yeah, as a syncing service for files and for data, and it's just, it's not there with Dropbox if you've been using it before.
I think just goes to show that every silver lining has a cloud. I'll stick a drum roll in there if you like, Richard.
Yeah, go for it.
Please do.
I'd love to know what is actually going on at Apple behind the scenes, because they've never managed to get their cloud services right, have they?
Well, they haven't. The file synchronization, I think it used to get about 20 gigabytes with Mobile Me. And I thought, oh, that's handy. I'll stick a few MP3s in there. And when I get to work, they'll be there for me to listen to. 2 days later, it still hadn't managed to transfer a couple of CDs worth. It was terrible.
Oh, was that through iDisk?
Yes, iDisk.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. No, the single worst storage system I've ever used.
That was one of the reasons that prompted me to go with Dropbox 3.5 years ago. In fact, my subscription for Dropbox is coming up in about 2 weeks' time. And I actually pay for it. I pay for 100 gigabytes of space. So, you know, I don't know, $100 a year or something. It's worth every penny.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I'm still on a free account because I've been fortunate enough to refer enough people. I think mine's at 5 gigabytes at the moment. I was paying for quite a long time, but I realized my usage was still within the free account. So I just dropped back to the free service. But yeah, it's just, it has always worked. It will always work no matter what. And even if you have no internet connection, well, you still got all the files on your computer. If you accidentally quit Dropbox, it doesn't take everything with it. If you unlink your computer, it doesn't take everything with it. Everything is still saved in that Dropbox folder.
I just having a look while you're talking about that, Jordan, I'm currently using 58.9 gigabytes of 128.73, which is available to me. I mean, I've done the whole referral thing as well, and so on. So I've got a bit more than the 100 gig that I pay for. But I'm using, what's that? Just under about 45% of it, you know, almost 60 gig. Mm. But I find it that useful.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Right, chaps. What should we move on to next?
You missed out your refurb 27-inch iMac, didn't you?
Oh, sorry. I had to completely skip that bit, didn't I? Yeah, Apple Store is now offering refurbed 27-inch iMacs. It took a while because they had trouble just making 27-inch iMacs in the first place. So, you know, before we get some ones that needed repairing and refurbished, it took a while because there wasn't that many out brand new in the first place.
Now, normally I'd recommend people to look at the refurbs part of the Apple website in order to get a refurb machine, and Jordan will be able to tell us more about what a refurb machine actually is. And I think it's a very good way to buy a new Apple device because you're getting the full warranty and you're still able to use AppleCare on it as well, if you like. You can buy that. I don't think I'd be recommending people to buy these refurb 27-inch iMacs at the moment because we're still very early on in that particular product's lifespan. It was only introduced in, what, December? They've had supply issues up until a couple of weeks ago. They're just starting to come through now. And I was reading a report a couple of weeks ago. Some chap bought one and the whole screen just fell out as he was using it.
Oh,
and then
God.
He had a complete support nightmare with his Apple store in the States. Oof. Who claimed that he was trying to tamper with it.
What?
I mean, I don't know who's telling the truth. I just read the story on the internet. And as you know, you can believe everything you read on the internet these days. and everything you listen to as well.
Definitely what you listen to. Definitely. So, yeah, I mean, there's 21-inch iMacs out there now, but the 27-inch have just arrived. I imagine it's not going to be easy to get hold of one of these.
Well, it's the same all the time with the refurb store. I think you need to keep an eye on it on a daily basis.
Yeah, they're going
to
go quick.
Monitor it for a week or two, and you'll be able to see what sort of stuff comes through. But I think it is a good way. In fact, my mother, she was using 21.5-inch iMac. She wanted a 27-inch iMac. And we waited until one of the previous generations, the thick ones, came up. I think it was beginning of this year. One came up in the refurb store, and she was able to buy that because, you know, you get the super drive. And she didn't need the skinny one, really. And it just represented such good value as well.
Yeah, definitely.
But Jordan ought to tell us what a refurb Mac actually is.
Yeah, basically, they're just an iMac that's either been returned due to a fault or it, for some reason, failed within the factory, or it was just an unwanted machine, usually. Cosmetic-wise, they're in perfect condition. It's not a used machine in any way. They go through the entire refurb process, whether or not it was completely unused and someone bought it and had buyer's remorse, or it had, say, a failed logic board. So it'll go through a parts check process, come out the other end with a brand new serial number, or, you know, Apple accessories will be new. Usually, I mean, it's been a while since I've seen a refurb Mac, but usually they're brown boxed, so you don't tend to get the original box, simply because Apple aren't going to manufacture a whole new expensive shiny box when a brown box will do, effectively. Mm. So they won't waste any extra money on the boxes. I think it's probably just to keep environmental costs down more than anything else. But it has a new serial number. It's a brand new Mac in terms of the service you'll get from Apple. So if you take it to an Apple store or you give Apple Care a call, like you said, Johnny, you can take Apple Care on it. And it's serviced in the same way a 100% original iMac would have been serviced. There's actually no difference on the repair side of it, whether or not it's certified refurbed or it's a brand new machine. It's treated in exactly the same way.
If you don't need the latest or greatest, I think that it's, and in fact, you can get, as we can see here, you can get some very recent machines anyway. This is only a few months old, less than 4 months old, really. You can get some very new machines at, you know, 15, 20. I've seen stuff at 33% off. Not very often, but, you know, you can get some significant discounts, normally 15 to 20%. And I think it's a very good way to, I mean, look at it this way, you know, you can buy a refurb iMac and afford the Apple Care on it to give you the 3 years cover.
Yeah. If you're looking for a new iMac, then a refurb is definitely the way to go with a lot of the Macs. However, Apple do offer a lot of discounts that aren't necessarily well advertised. So everyone tends to know about higher education and student purchases where they'll give you a discount depending on the level of education you're attending at the moment. So if you've got an Apple store near you, it's always worth letting them know if you're a student. And if you're in higher education, you do get some great discounts on a new Mac. Also, Apple do a sort of a business purchase scheme for people who work at certain businesses where if you work at one of their list of businesses they partnered with, you're entitled to a discount as well. And I think this applies to things like maybe Barclays or, you know, those types of companies who have in some way partnered with Apple in the past and said, if you'll give our employees a bit of a discount, we'll do something for you or whatever.
I think Barclays do the finance for Apple stuff, don't they?
Yeah, I think they're one of the... it's the employee... It's not the Apple Store employee ones. It's like an employee purchase program, which is a little bit different from the Apple employee purchase program. But it's worth going in, and if you work for a major corporation like Barclays, NHS, whatever, just ask in the Apple Store, I work at this company... is there any discounts offered for this particular company? Worst case, they'll just say no. Best case, you'll get 10-12% off a new iMac. So it's worth asking.
Definitely.
Oh, that's a bigger discount than I thought, actually.
It does vary depending on the institution and the model machine. For example, iPads, unless they've changed that recently, I don't think even apply for discounts for anyone. So businesses can't even get a discount, even if you order in bulk. I understand that. Because they're such a popular product, they don't need to discount them to tempt you into buying one. If you're looking for an iPad, you're going to buy an iPad. So
a year or two ago, a friend of mine went to buy an iPad and a Mac Mini. It was going to be his first Mac computer. he uses Windows PCs for business. But he was really attracted to the Mac. I think he'd just got an iPhone. His daughter had his old iPhone, which she'd managed to drop and smash the screen. They went into the Apple store in Brighton. He was buying a new iMac at the time, which is probably £500-600. He's buying an iPad. That was another £400 or £500 for whichever model he went for. He was buying something else. And just while he was talking through with the Apple chap, his daughter mentioned she'd smashed the screen on her iPhone. Could they do anything about it? They replaced it with a new iPhone because he bought, you know, £1,500, £2,000 worth of Apple kit with him that day. I think they gave him a 5% discount as well, something like that, because he was buying so much. But, you know, sort of to ease the sale, to ensure it went through, they I mean, it was her fault. She'd smashed the screen, but, you know, they replaced it anyway. So, you know, if you're going in to spend a lot of money with them, they I think they do look after you.
I think it's always worth asking. Today, for example, well, the last couple of days, I've been in touch with Logitech. I have a speaker system that had one of the speakers had failed. It just doesn't turn on anymore. And I'd had it for about 7 years. So I honestly wasn't expecting anything. I just wanted to know if they could repair it. And if not, I'll probably look for something else. So I contacted them and told them what happened. And they said, yes, it's faulty. And because of its age, we don't repair it. However, as a gesture of goodwill, we'd like to give you 50% off a replacement speaker system of your choice. So they give me a coupon code for half price speakers if I want to buy one in the next 30 days.
That's not bad at all.
And all I wanted to know is, could they repair it? And they came back to me and said, we'll give you half price, and which was phenomenal. So it's always worth asking, you know, if something's gone wrong, just ask. At the end of the day, the worst case, all they'll say is, no, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. The best case, they'll help you out. So definitely, always ask.
That is pretty good customer service.
Yeah, I was impressed, actually.
You're tweeting about it today. You're talking about it to us now. That's good. That's good for them.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I have looked around my room and I do have a Logitech trackpad, a trackball, Logitech keyboard, another set of speakers. So I do use a lot of Logitech gear, but I never even mentioned that to them. And I expected this because after 5 years with an Apple computer or an Apple product, it's vintage. It's not even serviceable anymore. It's, you know, you buy a new one. So the fact that they came back and said, sorry, it's 50% off, was a bit staggering, really. So it was definitely worth asking.
Not bad at all.
Cool. So I don't think I've missed anything else. So should we move on to hot hardware and software?
Well, you missed the Thunderbolt announcement then, haven't you?
No, we mentioned that.
Well, I mentioned it, but I thought we were coming on to it.
Well, okay. I don't think there's anything more to say about it, really.
Well, we could mention that, you know, it enables a way for Retina displays on a 23-inch panel, 4K resolution, 3840 by 2160, perhaps. Or we could just gloss over it and move on.
I think you summed that up perfectly.
I saw that. I mean, you put a link in there, Richard. I think it was you, but I found a much better one. If you go to sparsebundle.net, there's something posted on Monday the 8th of April, which is quite interesting about Thunderbolt. I recommend people read that.
Good idea.
I agree. Shameless plug.
Now, then.
Right, so hardware, software, anyone got anything?
No, didn't you have anything?
I just wondered if anybody had anything that they hadn't put in the dock.
Nope.
Okay, then it's down to me. So, how was the
catch? You've chosen a visual thing again, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I can actually explain this quite a lot. You don't need to see it particularly, but...
waiting for this explanation.
I am too, because he said, make sure you watch this video before we have the podcast. So, go on, explain it, Richard.
So, I was at the Gadget Show this weekend, which was brilliant, by the way. And if anyone is toying with the idea of going, go.
Well, it's a bit late now. It's closed.
Well, next year.
Okay.
I'm almost certain there'll be a next year because it was completely sold out on Saturday. The the most amazing thing that I saw there was a little robot called NAO is the name of it, by a company called Aldebaran Robotics, which sounds futuristic and as if they'll probably will take over the world with that name at some point. And it stands about
23 inches, almost 2 foot.
Yep, probably a little bit bigger than your iMac. Well, yeah, if you've got a 21-inch iMac. So this robot can recognize faces. It can localize sound. So if you start speaking to it, it will turn its head to see where you're talking from. It has built-in nuance voice recognition.
To see where you're talking from. I'm so tempted to say something there.
It can what?
You say to see where you're talking from.
As in the room, sorry. If you see what I mean. You know, if you were standing behind it, we'd try to turn behind it to localize the sound. Where'd I get up to? Yeah, so it's got nuanced voice recognition, so it can understand, it can speak to you. It has built-in speakers, so it can play music for you if you like. What else could it do?
Well, if it gets knocked down, it can get up again.
Which, if you watch it, it's just incredible to watch. Absolutely incredible. The guy did that at the gadget show. He kind of pushed it onto the floor. It was lying flat on its back. It bent its knees, arched its back, and pushed itself up with its elbows.
Also, when it falls over, it puts its arms in front of it to protect itself as it goes down.
Yeah, which the first time you see it, you go, no, that's not for real. So literally when the guy was demonstrating this at the gadget show, the whole sort of crowd that was around that particular stand just gasped. Everyone just gasped. We were like, no way did we just see that. It was so human and lifelike the way it made itself stand up again. And then just to sort of put the icing on the cake, the guy demonstrating put his hand out.
Does it ice cakes as well?
It probably can. It's got good enough. It's got good enough fine grip and pressure. It seriously can. It's got pincer grip. He demonstrated it sort of picking a ball up out of his hand and stuff like that. And it held onto his fingertip and started to walk along with him. Just like a little child. I was like, oh my God, that is incredible. And then they kind of had to, just to kind of showcase, you know, sort of its movement and things like that, it had it dancing to your favourite and mine, Johnny, Gangnam Style.
Oh, I like that. No.
And even better, the best though was when they had one of the robots dancing to Thriller by Michael Jackson.
I don't like that.
Oh, it was properly doing the dance moves. It was just amazing to watch.
Was it clutching its crotch?
Yes, I think it was. It was that good.
Have you seen Eaton Style?
Eaton Style
on YouTube.
No.
Okay, something else. Carry on with your robot.
And the other thing that, like, when it's kind of looking at you, the way that they've arranged the lights in its eye, they kind of blink like a real eye. So they kind of light up and go off again in a bit like a blinking effect to give that a little bit more realistic.
Did you hear Tony Hawk's comedian singing Gangnam Style on I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue on Radio 4 last year?
No.
Oh, fantastic. Anyway, carry on with your robot.
You're enjoying your Gangnam Style this week, aren't you?
You know, when I first heard it, I following on Twitter, everybody's going on about Gangnam Style. I thought, what is this? This is rubbish. Some internet meme or something. And I came to Gangnam Style fairly late on, and when I first heard it, I thought, this is a load of rubbish. It really is. But my son can dance really well to it, and I really like it now. And there's lots of parodies on it. Yeah. It's very good.
If I think on it, I will send you the little video clip I took of the robot doing Gangnam Style.
Oh, have you got it?
Yeah.
Oh, I want to see that.
I'll send it to you. It's amazing. I wish I'd take more of it, actually. I think I was just so taken aback with it. So anyway, so it's called the NAO robot, anyway. And if you follow the the link that we'll put up in the show notes. But it's Aldebaran Robotics, and NAO is the name of the robot.
Names that just roll off the tongue. It's gonna
totally.
It's
totally
going to be a hit, this, isn't it?
Yeah. LadeBaran. That's the name of the company.
We'll stick in the show notes on Q.am. That's Q.am.
Yep. And if you want one, it'll only set you back £10,000.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Because, like, I was watching it, I was like, oh my God, how much does it cost? And I was thinking, if he says anything reasonable, I've bought it already. And he went, yeah, it's only £10,000. And he, like, I was like, oh God. It's just totally deflated. They're primarily aiming it at the educational sector.
Rich but stupid.
What?
People who are rich but stupid.
Well, it's definitely aiming at rich but stupid people.
Educational sector. Education hasn't got any money.
Maybe they do in other parts of the world. They may not know a country, Johnny, but...
No, that's true.
You know, if they can afford iPads for every student in half the classes in America, I'm sure they can push to a robot.
Yeah, my son's school bought 200 netbooks or something daft.
Yeah, that was a good use of money, wasn't it?
Oh, complete waste. In 18 months' time, all those batteries are going to be knackered.
And, but the other thing is obviously it's also fully programmable, and they've got a, you know, sort of program, educational program to allow sort of students and children to learn how to do robotics and things.
Educational program 10, print, do not waste your money. 20, go to 10.
This is the future that you're looking at, Johnny, I'm telling you.
It's a future of a robot that can dance to Thriller and be pushed over and get back up again.
Yep. Well, surely it should dance to Chumbawamba.
If you programmed it, it could do it. I'm sure it could.
Program it to throw a glass of water in John Prescott's face. I wonder if I'm making enough cultural references here to completely alienate Jacob. He's going to have so much Googling to do.
It won't matter. He won't be listening to any of this anyway.
I don't think Alex listens either. Alex, here's a little test. Alex, if you can iMessage me with a single word, Chumbawamba, then I know you listen to the show.
Or we'll send a fleet of these robots over and take back the colonies.
Yeah. So have you? I take it then you've had a chance to watch the video.
No, I can be asked.
I did.
Yes, I did. I did. I watched the video.
And were you not impressed?
Yeah, I was actually, because there was that big Japanese robot, I think it was called Aibo or something a couple of years ago, and they got it to run along a track. And, you know, just getting a robot to walk or to run to mimic that human movement, which comes so naturally to us. I mean, we've had thousands of years doing it. But, you know, I suppose the computational effort for a device like that to stay on its feet and to move forward is huge, isn't it? And it's taken them a long time to get to that point. And they actually had a big, you know, sort of a human-sized robot with a backpack running along a track.
Mm.
That was absolutely incredible itself. So to see the video of this Aldebaran Robotics NAO thing, walking along and getting knocked over and getting back up again, absolutely incredible stuff. I was really impressed.
Yeah, it is. It was just incredible to see. I never thought in a million years I'd see anything as advanced as that gadget show.
Did they sell many while they were there?
I don't know. I presume it's just a showcase, really. You know, some people were just there just to show off what they're capable of doing rather than actually selling anything. So, yeah. I mean, there was a car there that ran on ammonia. But it's still just a prototype at the moment, you know. So it's just, there's a bit of showcasing stuff goes on as well as selling. And you could buy loads of really crap tablets for £40 as well if you want. So
are they, what, stone tablets or?
They may as well be.
Not that advanced.
For what use they'll be. just absolutely appalling bits of technology alongside some stunning technology. So it was really fascinating to see. But yep, so I would say that was definitely the future in the making. So I'm calling it hot.
So this is a pale 23-inch tall robot with orange hair. And interestingly, the cameras aren't mounted in the eyes. There's one in the middle of its forehead and one in its mouth. Why not put it in the eyes?
That's a good question. I didn't realise the eyes weren't in the eyes.
I'm full of good questions, mate.
Yep.
I would encourage anyone listening to go and watch the video, because the picture Johnny's just painted of this robot sounds hideous.
Yeah,
an orange-haired robot with an eye in its forehead.
It's not. It looks really nice and really cute.
It's got a rather surprised expression.
It does. Especially the beginning of the video where its head slowly turns to face you.
Yeah.
It's as though it's done something. And it wants you to know that it's done something.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry. I can't do that, Dave.
There's an article in... this really, really shocked me when I came home. I was just doing a bit of tidying up, and I picked up a copy of Wired magazine from about 2 months ago, and there it was on the front cover. I was like, no way. It's the same one.
There's some messages in there somewhere. I think you should ask Brenda if you can have a loan. And get yourself one of these, Richard. Perhaps you can tell her it'll do the hoovering for you or something. You can program it to do the hoovering.
Yeah. Well, the lady on the front cover who worked for the company who made it, Aldebaran, she's no longer working with them now. She's off doing something else to do with making social robots or something. But she liked hers so much that she forewent spending her money on getting a car and bought her robot to take it with her.
Does she ride the robot to work? No, she's forgone the car?
No, I think the robot stays at home.
Thankfully.
Yeah, I wouldn't take
perhaps
10 grand
could,
a robot
you know,
out
program
the house.
It to give her a piggyback or something. I don't know.
So it's the future, and 3D printing, but that's probably for another conversation. Johnny, what did you think?
You should ask Jordan first.
Sorry, Jordan, what do you think?
I'm on the fence about this, to be honest, not to be a complete buzzkill. It's great technology, but I just can't see the point of it. What I'm going to say hot. I'm going to say hot because it does look cool, but I can't see the point of a 23-inch robot that can recognize my face and fall over stylistically. So it's hot, but yeah. If you've got 10 grand spare, go buy one.
I think it's hot in so much that it's an amazing showcase of what can be done, and it's obviously a stepping stone to popularizing robotics. I think if you can do all of that for £10,000,
I hope so, because we've all been teased with robotics for years now.
We're
still overdue with the jetpacks. You know, where's the robots?
Yep.
You know, they're not here.
They're coming.
Yeah, I look at this. I'm just counting my loose change here. See whether I've got. I think that it's the way things are going, isn't it? It's technology. Everything's got to start somewhere. And, you know, we see how technology moves on and miniaturizes and how it's perfected and how it develops, how it evolves. And we're still, I think, in a very early stage of robotics. I mean, I remember when I was at school, you'd just have these little robots that you could program forward five, turn right, forward three, turn left. And they'd just plot out, you know, a very sort of square route with a marker pen or something on a big piece of paper. But, you know, everything's got to start somewhere. And this is what we're up to now, just in my lifetime so far already. And this is really quite incredible. Mm. You know, we've got little devices that will go around and hoover your carpet for you, you know, when you're out. Yeah, I mean, this stuff is only going to get better and better, isn't it? And, you know, I mean, this appears to be some sort of consumer device for, you know, somebody who really does have a lot of money and not enough to spend it on. But the price can only come down. I can remember a few years ago being demonstrated a sat-nav system from Garmin, and it was £1,100.
Wow.
We've now got sat-nav applications for $4.99 on
your
iOS devices. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. Okay, so you pay a bit for the device, but you can go out and buy a sat nav for 60 or 70 quid now. I think $100 to our American listeners. But Yeah, I mean, robotics, it's only going to go and get better, isn't it? And this is really quite incredible. And to see some of the things that this can do, getting up after it's being knocked down, sort of almost running along, you know, just that whole movement thing, turning its head to, you know, the source of the sound, being able to grasp a ball, being able to follow the motion of a ball through the air as you move it. Yeah, really, quite incredible, really. Quite interesting. I was surprised, actually. I was surprised at the price you mentioned. I didn't know that. I didn't know it was so expensive. But, yeah, the price is only going to come down. Hot or not, I don't know. I'm a little bit on the fence with this as well. I can't help but think, watching that video, that what they've done is they've created this device and they've programmed it to do some things very, very well. And I just wonder that once you've handed over your £10,000, got the thing home, charged it up, said hello, that it doesn't do these things, or it doesn't do the things that you're expecting it will do because it needs programming, or it hasn't learned, or it's just not capable. I just wonder whether it's a bit like Siri on your iOS device. We had these demonstrations that Siri could do all these sorts of things. The only things I can get Siri to do at the moment are send texts and schedule appointments. And when I ask it to try and call somebody, it ends up calling Rolf in Sweden.
I was impressed with it this weekend when I was away. I just said to Siri, I want some Italian. And it found me 11 Italian places near where I was staying in Birmingham.
I want some Italian could mean so many things.
Well, it did the clean version, Johnny, and give me somewhere to eat.
I don't know what's going through your mind there, Richard. So, yeah, okay, so I'm on the fence. Coming back to your robot, and I did do my best to put you off talking about the robot. Yeah, I'm on the fence about this. Yeah, I think it's hot in a way, but the price is not.
The price, of course the price is not. But I haven't seen that. I just thought, oh my God, I think we're going to have robots in my lifetime in my house. That's really quite fascinating.
Quite incredible.
Yep.
It's got nothing to do with Max, and that's par for the course with you too. So,
oh, I did see one thing that was kind of Mac related, if you like, but it was kind of everything related. But it was available for Mac, and I don't know if we've touched on something like this before, but it was like it was a clip-on screen that you could put on any display and turn it into a full touchscreen display. Did we talk about something like this once?
I don't think so. What was this?
Basically, you had a panel with a sheet of thin glass across the front, and it has, I think, is it infrared? It just kind of has two, very basic, has two straps across the back of it. It's certainly not Apple level engineering by any measure. And plugs in via USB, and it turns whatever kind of display that you've got into a touchscreen display. So you could use it on they could custom make one for up to 150 inches. Or you can have it just sort of normal screen sizes and Mac screen sizes and things like that. And it supports multi-touch display as well. So it's pretty fascinating. We were messing about with the 21.5. Sorry, I'm hearing a weird noise from my house. We were messing about with a 21.5-inch iMac with this touch thing on it, and it works really, really well. It's quite surprising.
Is this something you clip on the front of it?
Yeah.
On the display?
Yeah. Yeah, they had such a small little booth, the people who were doing it, but obviously they're just a bit of a sort of, I guess, startup company. But yeah, and it worked, you know.
I do remember seeing these a long time ago, where there was this effective screen you attached to the front, and it looked like it just hung on the front of the display, and it gave you a touch screen, but it was kind of, you know, a touch screen like an old phone with a stylus type touch screen. So, you know, you had to really press the screen for it to do anything, and it never it didn't seem to be popular. But if this is a touch screen that might turn anything into it. Was it sort of a big frame, or was it very, very thin over the display?
I would say the frame was the sort of bezel on it was probably about a centimetre thick, if that.
Oh, hang on, I do remember this. We talked about it in an early show, didn't we?
That's what I mean. Is it something we talked about before?
I think so, yeah. It was crap, wasn't it?
But it works. It does actually work. It doesn't look very good. Even my friend who was there, who's sort of more of a Windows Android guy, was saying, would you really want to put that on the front of your Mac?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, the hardware's very stylish, isn't it?
Yeah. And we talked about the old, gorilla arm, holding your arm up the whole time.
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's going to get very tiring. I think if you're holding your arm up above your, sort of above your heart, really, it's going to become very tiring very quickly. And I think the point I made in the previous show was if you had a large screen, perhaps even larger than your 27-inch iMac or the 27-inch Lenovo, if you remember that, if you had a very large screen, touch screen, which was maybe at about 40 degrees, a bit like an easel, a bit like a draftsman's table, for doing your CAD stuff on. I don't know, it wouldn't be CAD, that's computer-aided design, isn't it? Went back in the days when they're using protractors and pencils and stuff. Then, because it's lower down in front of you, I think that would be fairly easy from a touchscreen point of view. Lifting your arms up, it's not going to work.
Speaking of the Lenovo, that was there.
Was it?
Yeah. You know what they chose to demonstrate the wonderful abilities of a 27-inch tablet, Johnny?
Windows 8 with its big blocky screen.
No, they chose to demonstrate a matching card game.
Isn't that what the kids were playing on the floor after they nicked it from their dad's desk?
So that's all they would allow you to play around with it doing was a card game on a 27-inch screen. I was like, you are kidding. That's just the biggest waste of an opportunity ever.
You know what? Just go and buy a deck of cards.
So the name of that company is Soladapt, Soladapt. They're the ones who make it. So it'll work on Windows, Mac, and Android software. And
I think this is just more technology that nobody needs.
Well, we thought when we were messing about with it, because we didn't realise it was clipped on, we thought it was actually a capacitive screen. It was that good. So, I'm not saying anybody needs it or anything like that, but I've got to say the thought of turning me living room TV into a touchscreen telly was rather exciting.
You want grubby fingerprints all over it?
I've already got that. I've got two kids.
Mine's got a scratch right in the middle where my daughter managed to throw something at it when she was about two. It doesn't matter. I don't watch television.
It's just as well when you don't know. So, yeah, anything from 15 inches to 159 inches they can create one for. So there you go. So that was something vaguely Mac-related.
It's as vague as it gets.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was... given that the whole thing was sponsored by Windows, then there wasn't going to be that much Mac stuff there, I guess. But it was very iOS dominant, as you can imagine. So there we go. That's hot hardware. No software this week. Name checks, anyone? I think you've put someone in there, Johnny.
Yeah, Mr. Jose Reyes. He's a regular listener, in touch on Twitter, not liking the idea of Apple two-step verification. And to be honest, I'm with him on this. I've read an article in Mac User magazine, and it's the nuclear option, really. You get something wrong, they'll lock you out of your account forever.
I've backed off from doing it as well. Yeah, I looked at it, and I started going through it, and I was like, no, I don't like the sound of this at all. So for the time being, I'm holding fire with that.
It's too difficult to understand for the normal person. And I'm not the normal person. I'm involved in technology day to day. I'm finding it difficult to get my head around. And I read the Mac User article, which is in their latest magazine, May 2013. And they talk about this, and I'm just thinking, I don't want to do this. And the fact that Apple's recommending you write down the recovery key.
Yeah. Jordan, have you done it?
Yes, but it's quite extensive. And once you have that recovery key, it effectively absolves Apple of any ramifications if you forget your information. Because at the end of the day, Apple can go, well, it's your information. You were told to remember it and told to keep it safe. If you haven't, sorry, there's nothing we can do. But I tend to trust myself more than any web company. I mean, even Apple, as secure as they are, you know, they've had security slip-ups now and again. And there's a few websites where I shouldn't, but I rush the security questions, so I just set something and forget. So I'd rather not have to worry about security questions if I have to log into my account. I use 1Password, so I'm not going to forget my password. It's backed up to Dropbox. That has its own unique password as well. So provided I don't lose every single device in one go, I should be all right. And I've even got a separate backup anyway. But that's more than any average user is going to do. So it's probably a bit overkill. But I'm happy that I've got two-step enabled, but I can see why a lot of people don't want to enable it. And to be honest, I don't blame them. But it doesn't change the day-to-day usage of the App Store, which I thought it was going to do. I thought it was going to ask you to verify your
device every
time.
Well, I think it's like Google in its approach, in a way, isn't it? Once you've verified the device, then it's not going to ask you for this two-step. It's like setting up the special passwords for each device using Google, two-step authentication. Mm. I think it's like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you can still log into the App Store. You can still download stuff on the iTunes Store. There's no difference to how it works.
The difference is when you get a new device, when you upgrade your iPhone, when you upgrade your Mac, you know, then you need to re-authenticate. You need to authenticate the new device. And the problem you have is if you lose your device and you get one of your two different pieces of information wrong, it will lock you out of your account forever.
Yeah, and I'm not going to be, it's a common case with someone having multiple iOS devices, but a lot of people won't. So I've authenticated both my iPhone and my iPad. I've also authenticated a mobile number for SMS messages, so that can be used for your verification number as well. So even if I lose my iPhone and my iPad, I can still get a replacement SIM from my carrier, pop it into another standard phone that I've got as a backup here, and I can still authenticate my iTunes, my Apple ID. So I'm not completely screwed out of my account, but it's not a common situation. So the wording Apple use is quite, as you said before, it's quite nuclear in terms of, don't get this wrong. If you get this wrong, we will not unlock your account. So
Jordan, tell me, did you follow Apple's advice and write down your recovery key?
Absolutely not. I didn't even print it out. The worst thing was you can't copy and paste, which I can understand why, but it meant typing it into 1Password was a bit more difficult. And you have to then type it into Apple's website again to confirm when you do the next step. So it is forcing you to write it down properly. But printing it out, and suppose if you print it out and it has no other information on the piece of paper, maybe, but...
But every number beginning with RK... It's a bit of a giveaway, isn't it? If you know what you're looking for. Okay. Oh, Apple recovery key. That could be useful.
Yeah.
Well, do you not, could you not have taken a screen capture as a block you from doing that even?
No, you can screen capture. I actually did that as well. So because I didn't trust myself writing it down properly, even though I verified it, I not only put it into 1Password, I took a screenshot of the area and threw that into 1Password as an attachment as well.
You took a photograph of the screen and you got somebody else to come in and verify it.
Yeah, I've even completely copied my entire computer as it is. I have another Mac now sat next to me with the web page still open, just in case.
I think that for a company that's renowned for making complex things simple, they've really dropped the ball on this one, I think.
It could have been easier. I think a lot of the problems were just communication, the way it's worded, the way it's, you have to write this down, you have to print this. The recovery key is a unique approach. It's something that is quite useful and it works with File Vault. But to give the information of, we're no longer going to do security questions, and if you lose this key, on your own head be it, I think that was a little too blunt for users to take, especially with Apple just reeling from the fact that there was such an obvious security exploit that opened up, that was uncovered. So probably wasn't the best thing to start using stern wording and stern communication when you've just made a huge security hole.
It's interesting that we can go on a 5-minute rant just because we're mentioning that Jose's been in touch. Hello, Jose.
Who's Mel and Johnny?
Oh, Mel, she works with my wife. And my wife was telling me this evening before I came up to record this with you, she's saying, oh, Mel listens to podcasts. It helps her get to sleep at night. So, so Mel, if you've made it this far, then you've... Yeah. Mel, if you've made it this far, go and see a doctor and get some tablets to help you sleep or something, because clearly we're not doing the trick.
It's much less painful than listening to this.
That's right. I mean, I spent last night listening to... a couple of episodes that I recorded with you two previously. And I listened to episode 14, I think it was, which is about an hour and something long. And it didn't get me off to sleep. I was well into the second episode before you two sent me off to sleep. So, yeah, hello, Mel. Hello, Jose. Hello. Oh, yeah. Hello, Neil. Don't invoice us.
Right, good, good show, guys. Where can we find you?
Jordan?
I can be found at on Twitter and app.net at Jordan Merrick, JORDANMERRICK. You can also find me over at sparsebundle.net, where you'll find some Apple and tech-related posts and various blogging and the like.
Go to about.me/JohnWinter, and there's a few links. I actually did a guide for iFixit some time ago as well. So you can go and have a look at that if you like to fix tech. And on Twitter at Johnny_Winter. Also on app.net at Winter, but I don't bother using it really. It just seems like Twitter for techie people, and everybody I follow on there just reposts what they post on Twitter. Seems like a waste of time to me.
Yep, I'm the same. I'm on at Rich Harkness on Twitter and app.net, and got me blog that I occasionally write on, areyougettingit.co.uk.
Richard, why did you choose that name for your blog?
Right. The reason I chose that name, and I know it's probably not the most sensible name in the world, was I was trying to think of something Apple-related, and particularly perhaps Steve Jobs-related. So I looked for domain names of everything that you could possibly think of that Steve Jobs has said in speeches or quotes of Steve Jobs and things like that. And they were all taken, all of them, you know, I'm trying to give an example now, but they're all gone anyway. So that was the one that I came up with, because that was what he said. If you remember the original iPhone announcement, and he had the little spinning icon on the screen, because he originally announced it as three revolutionary devices, an internet communicator, a phone, and the best iPod ever. And as he was doing it, he kept clicking the wheel, and it was spinning the same logo around. And he says to the crowd, "Are you getting it?" And that's where I got the name from.
Thank you.
Do you remember that?
I didn't watch that one, just as much as I haven't read Walter Isaacson's book yet either.
The iPhone keynote is probably one of the best keynotes I've ever watched.
I think you can watch all the keynotes through your Apple TV now, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
Perhaps I'll do that when I've got some free time, which is never at the moment. I'll do it one day.
You'll enjoy it.
I'll probably get around to it by the time I've got one of those robots in my house.
Yeah, you can let that do your writing for you and sit and watch the Apple TV all day.
Good stuff.
Okay, thanks everyone, and thank you for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
That was Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTMPodcast or at Q Broadcasting, or find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am.
Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find him on the internet, www.tdmss.com. Thanks for listening.
Apple Macintosh.
Well, I actually wrote down the times now. Insert drum roll at 49:24. you know what? We've spent 1 hour, well, it'll be 1 hour 32 minutes, I think, on the podcast, which is because we spent 5 minutes 38 before we started. We've actually spent an hour and a half. Hey, I tell you what, we're just like one of the American tech podcasts, something on. We've spent an hour and a half talking about absolutely bugger all.
Yeah. Well done, guys.
Another job well done.